As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome, everyone, to So Very Wrong About Games, a board gaming podcast about board games and plague carts. I'm here with my good friend, Mark. How are you this week, Mark?
This is the plague cart. We are simultaneously in the plague cart and driving the plague cart.
That's right. We are plague cart.
Yes.
All right.
We are so sick. Between the two of us, we are so ill that I'm no epidemiologist. I'm no expert on these things. It is possible that we will give you an ear infection over the course of this episode.
I wouldn't, yeah, but not liable in any way.
By downloading this episode, you actually sign a general waiver, and that is why you might, when you're coming home one day, find me rifling through your stuff. But nobody reads the end user license agreement anymore.
So this episode will be abridged. We are going to cut off the end bit, slap, cut off, scraped into the garbage. We're going to talk about the Eurus, we're going to talk about the games we played this week, and then we're going to finish with the news, and then that will be all.
Yes, we are deciding to marshal our wrongness. We will be less wrong this week, just to be more wrong overall. Because 10 years from now, something's going to come out and be like, I want to hear Mark and Walker be wrong about this thing. And that's why we have to pace ourselves when we're this sick.
And then during the episode, you'll hear me sort of trail off to silence and then be back at full volume. That was the edit cut of me coughing out half a lung, just so you know.
I don't think you have half a lung left, Walker. So let us begin with the as yet unnamed retrospective intro segment, the Eurus.
I was looking, it's been so long ago. Were we reviewing food?
The beefiest of games, Stroganoff by Andreas Stenning. And this is very much a game that has remained in our collections and remains in sort of a background rotation. Always happy to play. I would say that this is probably my second favorite Andreas Stenning after Hansa Teutonica. For me, though, there's a considerable gulf between Hansa Teutonica and Stroganoff. That's not really a ding on Stroganoff. That's more my enthusiasm for Hansa Teutonica. You probably, though, it's a little closer competition between Stroganoff and Gugong, I would wager.
Yes.
I'm less fond of Gugong than you are. Stroganoff, since its release, we've played a number of times, and it's been expanded. And my understanding is, this may be a little bit of an exaggeration, but the Game Brewer has released 17 different component upgrade packs in waves for Stroganoff.
Yeah, people didn't like what came with the deluxe set when it got released from the crowdfunding. So they said, well, we have this expansion, and if you pledge for this, then for $5 we upgrade everything again. I'm going to be surprised what I see in the box.
It's wild. I think that publishers need to stop using the word deluxe. I think that what they should really start using is words like improved. Because then when somebody says, this isn't, like, where are the metal coins? This isn't five times as thick as my thumb. It's like, well, look, we never said it was going to be deluxe. We just said it was going to be better than what other people were going to be getting, right? I see this all the time. People are like, look, deluxe means triple layer boards, a 53-pound box, and a metal start player marker. And look, if that's what you want and if that's what you're promised, that's what you're entitled to, right? And if you want to pay for that and you want to get that, that's fine. Just expectations are being generated. I was gonna
say, speaking of paying for and getting, the people that have paid, I guess this is news, but whatever, people that have paid four times what the game is about for Inventors have now received their copy because they were airshipped from the factory to their house. And so now they get to play and we'll get it later on in the year.
Stroganoff. No. Yeah, Stroganoff, it remains slightly differentiated from a lot of Euros. The whole action selection element is kind of clever and unique. Again, not as clever and unique as Hans of Teutonica is. Relatively clean. Again, not as clean. Andreas Stedding is a solid Euro designer, and I very much appreciate going back to Stroganoff every time we do. And for what it's worth, just for the record, I have zero complaints about the Stroganoff components. But then again, I only ever got the retail version and was only ever expecting the retail version, so I cannot comment on miscommunication and false expectations.
Yeah, I never have any problems with. As long as they're intact, I'm happy.
Fair enough. And that is the as-yet-unnamed retrospective intro segment, the Euros Stroganoff by Andreas Stedding. And now onto the games we played last week. Walker, what did you play last week?
Mark, we got a review copy of a game called Hissy Fit. This is a cooperative deck game.
That's my life story.
Just so. You're trying to get the cat into the carrier because it's time to get to the vet. And so there's multiple ways you can lose because you're going to be flipping up cards, cat cards, and they could have scratches on them or they could have hissy fits on them. And there are 9 hissy fit cards in the deck. So you know when you get to 9, you're going to lose because there's no way to deny it. But it's in groups of 3, and every time you get 3, you have to flip over the card and you have to do what it says on the back. It could be all sorts of different things. And then you get scratches as well. And there's ways to, you know, heal yourself. And then the cards have sort of like little tasks you have to do. Either the angry cat or the calm cat or any of those different symbols. And then from the player deck, you're drawing all these cards and you're playing to get rid of these hissy fit cards before they build up too much. Because they have an ongoing effect as well if you don't get rid of them. So you're going back and forth. And the gist of the game is deciding on how to spend your 2 actions. Because you're either playing the cards or you're drawing more cards or you're forfeiting both actions to draw 3 cards. So it's just sort of this action efficiency that you're trying to figure out. And for the time it takes and for the amount that you're doing, I think it's a great little game.
Do the cats have names?
Yes. And some of the pictures are adorable. Some of the pictures are hilarious. I like very much almost everything about this game, especially the time it takes to play, which is very short. And that's Hissy Fit. This is designed by Levy Robinson and Chris Stone. Chris Stone, I believe, is also the publisher because it comes out by Stone Age Distractions. And it was a review copy that we got. I believe it was a crowdfunding adventure that they did, and it's fulfilling. So I'm sure, hopefully, we'll see it in retail and people will be able to get to play it.
So my week was one of infection and solitude in equal measure. And so all of my games for this week are solo games, either solo variants of existing games or games that are explicitly solo. The first one being Finished! With the exclamation point. That's about as much enthusiasm and as much volume as I can marshal in my current diminished state.
Poor exclamation point.
Yes.
All the others got so much attention. This one.
This is a solitaire game by Friedman Fries, published, of course, by 2F Spiel. It's important to remember that Friedman Fries, in some ways, kind of presaged or was ahead of the time on the great solo games explosion. Finished was very much of its time, but before that, he published a solitaire card game called Friday, which I know you've played before, and I find Friday devilishly clever and very interesting, and as I say, it was kind of ahead of its time. Finished, on the other hand, the theming is simultaneously aggressively prosaic and very delightful. It's prosaic because it's about someone trying to finish their data entry tasks. It is literally about a woman working an office job who needs to organize and collate data. And she is fueled in equal measure by 2 fundamental elements, caffeine and candy. I can relate to half of that because I've never, specifically the caffeine is delivered by a coffee. I do not enjoy coffee. Ever since I became acquainted with Dr. Steve's caffeine melts, I nonetheless indulge in caffeine. But being fueled by candy is absolutely a sentiment that I can respect. However, the actual gameplay, I've struggled to really engage with Finished in a substantive way because I keep bouncing off of it because I always end up feeling like, perhaps in vague evocation of the thematic elements, that I'm just shuffling cards around. ultimately, your decision points in Finished are about deciding to trigger various powers on cards that allow you subtle rearrangement abilities. Because, as I say, the goal is to take a randomized deck of cards from 1 to 47 and put them all in order. It's kind of like Solitaire, the 52-card traditional card game, in that once a card that is next in sequence comes up, you put it off into the score pile, and you start off with the 1, and then you try to score the 2 and the 3, etc., etc. And organizing things gets you towards that. And so far, so good. Like, that in and of itself, structurally, I don't really have a serious problem with. My problem are twofold. One of them is that I don't find the special abilities particularly interesting, nor transparent in terms of how you get to the end task. I think this is partially me not having internalized the puzzle. Even when I get the sense that I'm making progress, I'm not always entirely certain how I'm getting there. Now, one thing that I have internalized is that you do want to have as many cards as possible out in front of you at a time. You turn over 3 at a time, and the only time you're able to rearrange cards at will is once the cards in front of you for a given quote-unquote turn go away. So if you have the standard 3 cards and you draw the 18, the 42, and the 6, it's like, okay, well, you can put the 6 in front of the 18 and the 18 in front of it, or whatever the case may be. But if you have a whole bunch more cards, well, then that gives you a little bit more fine-grained sequencing available. Because if you sequence the 42 and then the next card you draw is the 8, not so hot. But if you have the 8 as part of the initial hand, you can put the 6 next to the 8, and then you're getting somewhere. That part I understand, but there's a whole bunch of other card manipulation things, which leads me directly to the second problem. At the end of the day, the fundamental rhythm of Finished ultimately becomes a lot about just shuffling cards around in an unsatisfying way, particularly because you can only start triggering the special powers by spending candy. And I find myself running out of candy relatively quickly because that's how you interact with the game, right? So if you don't have candy, all you're doing is you're flipping over 3 cards, then they go into the past. The past can only have 3 cards in it. So what I'm doing is I'm pulling over 3 cards, putting these other 3 cards at the bottom of the deck, shuffling out, pulling over 3 cards, rearranging them slightly, 3 cards go in, 3 cards at the bottom of the deck, 3 cards out. Over and over and over again, a certain number of times through the deck. And the amount of time that I spend making decisions, the amount of time that I spend just manipulating cards in front of me, I find the ratio way off. And so ultimately, especially when compared to even something by the same designer, in the same idiom, in the same genre, like Friday, I just find Finished ultimately disengaging. Now, this is despite the fact that I find so much about the presentation charming. You have these lovely wooden bits of coffee cups and bits of candy. If you successfully complete the game, or even regardless of how far you get, it forms a flipbook, Walker. The drawings on the cards form a flipbook. Now, granted, it's a flipbook of a woman drinking coffee at her desk as she's manipulating data.
Gotcha.
But nonetheless, that's really cool. Ultimately, I don't think I'm going to be going back to Finished. I've given it a number of tries. I haven't really internalized the puzzle insofar as I understand what I'm going to be doing with the puzzle. I still feel like I'm just moving cards around for very little effect. So I would rather just turn to other things by Friedman Freeze in the same broad wheelhouse. Now, I know that there is a shmup-themed solo game that Friedman Freeze has designed that gets even less love than Finished and Friday. And I'd give that one a shot because I really like the theming. And Friedman Freeze is always at least an interesting designer, but nonetheless, here we are. That is Finished.
All right, I'd like to talk about City of the Living. This is a Reiner Knizia reskin. Believe it or not, I don't think we ever played any of those. But anyway, it's a Reiner Knizia game that you have 2 actions, also surprising. And it's zombie-themed. So Trick or Treat Studios was nice enough to send this with to me, as well as Unchained, that card game that's very much like Nightfall. What you're doing in City of the Living is that it's fairly heads down. There's sort of tiles out on the board that everyone can buy, so it's sort of, I got that before you did. But otherwise, you're trying to maximize your board. There are sort of 7 rounds, and every round there are 5 tiles that are going to come up. And every tile that someone draws, on your turn you draw a tile, and one of the icons will be circled. And so you're going to be doing something on your board. And so there's one of every of the 5 things you're going to do. So every round you're going to do one of these 5 things. 3 of them is just more resources. 2 of them is comparing, you know, check marks to X's or locks to unlock. So you're sort of trying to maximize your board. And I played it solo and 2-player. The solo part wasn't that great, but playing with 2-player was a little more interesting. Seeing what your opponent was doing, trying to get to the tiles before they did. You can sort of risk and spend a bunch of resources and get a tile further up the track. I just found it very interesting.
Really? I played the original game of which this is a reskin, namely Prosperity, when it came out. And I find Prosperity simultaneously solid and unremarkable on the one hand, and on the other, very disappointing. It was very disappointing, partially because it was marketed as Reiner Knizia's, you know, return to heavy-ish Euros. Every few years, some publisher decides to pitch Reiner Knizia's next project is, remember those heavier Euro games he did 20 years ago? He's gone back to that style. It's like, he's not going, he hasn't gone, he's not going to.
He doesn't do that.
He doesn't do that anymore. And that, you know what? That's okay. People get to do what they want. I talked about this in Bloat. Under the rubric, actually, of T-Pain covering War Pigs. Like, every once in a while, that person is going to do that thing that you want them to do, but the rest of the time, they're not going to do the thing you want to do, and that's fine. They're going to do the thing that they want to do. Reiner Knizia doesn't want to cover War Pigs all the time. He wants to do the heavily auto-tuned voice stuff that he now does, and that's okay. We just have to accept that. I'm now fully mixing the metaphor. Yeah, Prosperity was fine. It was okay. I'm surprised you enjoyed it as much as you did. I'd be curious to see if anything's been changed. I'll definitely look over the rules at the very least. But it was solid but uninspired in my recollection.
What I really liked is the flow. You have your two actions, and they're very simple actions. Maybe get some resources, buy the tile, go up on this track. So you get through those actions very quickly. Next player flips over the tile, you get your stuff, and it goes on from there. And you only have to go through 7 rounds. So it goes really quickly, so that's what I like about it. And this is City of the Living by Reiner Knizia, published by Trick or Treat Studios, and it was a review copy sent to us.
I finally got to try Legacy of You. This is something I've been meaning to try ever since it came out last year. Legacy of You is a solo game designed by Shem Phillips at Garpel Games.
I have a Legacy?
No, this is Legacy. It's not Legacy of Walker. It's Legacy of Mark.
Oh, of you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. I'm glad you understand.
All right.
Legacy of You is a game that comes up frequently in conversation, especially for people who are not particularly enthusiastic about Shem Phillips and Garpel Games' broader output. Frequently it's, okay, so Profession of the Place Name didn't work out for you, but hey, have you tried Legacy of You? So I felt the need to give it a shot. And it's really quite impressive. A lot of solitaire Euro games are just the solitaire mode of existing Euro games. And for better or worse, there are two dominant idioms of solitaire Euro games. Not universally, but overwhelmingly. One of them is the David Certe. So you've learned how to play the game. Now learn how to do the solo mode. Here's your 20-page solo mode rulebook version. That I often find to be not worth the effort. The other mode is the score attack mode, the sort of Agricola mode. It's like, oh, well, the solo works more or less the same way as the multiplayer mode, but here's your score threshold, see if you can beat it. Shrug. And that's fine. I'm perfectly willing to do that, and I've soloed my share of Uwe Rosenberg worker placement games as a specific example. But what I really like is a slightly more focused, dedicated experience. And on occasion, you get solo modes that do that. For example, just having picked on David Certe, the solo mode of Anacrity base game works like that swimmingly. You get a lovely little AI that's easy to execute. Here in Legacy of You, it is very much a resource conversion efficiency Euro game, and you're basically pulled in three different directions. One of them is infrastructure. You need to be able to build up infrastructure, but it's a relatively short-scaled game, so it's not the kind of thing where you're going to be spending a lot of time building up. You need to be able to address your immediate-term needs, and to that end, there are two additional pressures. One of them is you need to build these canals and these dams in order to deal with this massive flood. And the other that you need to deal with is, there are these barbarians who keep barbaring, and I don't know why. They show up and they want all my people and all my sheep, and I don't, look, I'm running out of both.
Greedy.
That's just exactly right. And I lost my first playing, which is great. It is designed around the idea of a sort of difficulty rubber banding. If you win games, harder cards enter the system. If you lose games, easier cards enter the system. And ultimately, it is the end of a 7-game campaign that determines ultimately whether you win or lose. And the rulebook is very clear about this. Like, look, don't sweat it if you lose your first couple games, comma, you loser. That's what the internet is for. The internet people are going to show up and say, no wonder you couldn't win the game, lol. You can barely win Regicide, lol. That is what I mean. Please feel free to leave that comment exactly in your email to support at aircanada.ca. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's got a very, very simple, straightforward, card-driven system. every turn you're going to get a certain number of cards. That's both a benefit and the burden, because the more cards you go through, the faster the flood goes. I guess it's chasing people, whatever. You have to kind of hand wave that part. And there are a variety of different ways you can use cards. And mostly I felt that the pressure was to get more cards into your system. There's a weak sort of deck building element, as well as use your cards to get more income. That requires you to build buildings. Anyway, as I say, lots of different trade-offs for very, very scarce resources. And a very sort of immediate visceral impact of barbarians and the flood coming after you. It's got a very well done insert, which I mentioned because it's really going to facilitate quick setup and quick teardown. I really like how focused overall Legacy of You is. Not only is it a relatively rules light experience, so you can remember how the systems work and come back to it, but it's also a relatively quick playing time. We're talking about 45 minutes or so. And for a resource management Euro, that's really good. And everything is designed to be able to make sure that you can come back and complete the campaign in a relatively short amount of time without breaking the bank or too much of a time commitment. So I'm definitely going to go back to Legacy of You. I'm absolutely going to play at the very least the second scenario. I'm probably going to finish the entire campaign. I might actually knock out a couple sessions in sequence over the course of the coming week as I maintain my isolation in a period of profound suffering.
Like we do with orphans.
No, oh. No. We do not do that with orphans, Walker. Oh, okay. Have you read our editorial policy about orphans? The orphaned Gibbons were at great pains to write it up.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I'm a big fan. This isn't necessarily converting me to the Church of Shem Phelps, but this is absolutely, I think, the strongest work of his that I have yet tried. It is extraordinarily well done in terms of solo Euro resource management games, and I really do wish that there were more focused campaign Euro-style solo games like this. It reminds me, actually, not mechanically, but in terms of overall market situation and focus of Under Falling Skies, which is also a solo game about which I'm very, very enthusiastic. Relatively low campaign overhead, relatively low rules overhead, but nonetheless a lot of variety and a lot of good mechanical trade-offs. So, big recommendation for Legacy of You by Shem Phelps, published by Garpil Games, 2023.
Thanks to a very kind listener, Mark, I finally got to play Bus. This is designed by Jorn Duman and Joris Versinger. It's originally put out by Splatter Spiel, but Capstone Games did like a 28th anniversary. And it's, I want to say, that one of their lighter games. It seems light, but all the action happens on the board. And there's cutting people off. There is, bushwhacking their buildings. There's cutting off their roots. All of this was really fantastic. I loved every part of it. It has a little bit of fiddliness with action selections. If you ever play Dominant Species, it feels a little bit like this. You're putting these cylinders down the side row, and then after everyone's put down as many cylinders as they want, you then start doing those actions in order. But you're putting the cylinders in a certain order, and then you're always completing them from left to right. So, and then they have a weird sort of strength of each power. It depends on how many buses a single person has out. It's like the total bus strength.
Yes.
And that can go up in the middle of the turn because it's like the second thing you do or something. And so you sometimes you're either going very early and doing a lot of things because, you know, the A is at the start, or you're going later and doing a lot of things because the A was at the end of that line. So it's very interesting sort of seeing how that works out. And then there are three sort of phases to the game. You either it's a bus game, so you're taking people on buses. They're either going to the office, or then they go to the pub, and then they go home. And you can play with that, with the space-time continuum.
Yeah, because it's the intersection of two very trenchant elements of civic planning, namely public transportation and time travel.
Exactly. Goes together perfectly.
Yeah.
And this did go together perfectly because the very last turn of the game, there was tension. I'd gone to that space and it was sort of, because you don't have to do it. All of the other spaces, you sort of, if you have to put up three buildings, you have to. If you go to the time space thing, you stop time and you're delivering people to the same places. Or you decide, or no one goes there, or you decide not to stop time and it just moves to the next thing. So creating that tension made people completely change what they were going to do. And I put it there as my last placement. So it was a great wrench in the system.
It was a threat. Do you know who's really good at bus? Cher.
Cher, yes.
If she could turn back time, she could find a way.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So it's a very low scoring game. because you try to set things up. People take your building spots. People cut you off. People take your passengers before you can get them. All of these things are great. I was so happy that I got a chance to play it. I'm looking forward to playing it a lot more. And that is Bus by Splatterspiel.
I think Bus was the second Splatter I'd ever played. I think as I recall, Antiquity was the first one. I fell in love with Antiquity. I still love it. And Bus was the second one. Bus was one of those early foundational hobby experiences. This is before the release of Food Chain Magnate, which, you know, for many people is the formative splatter. It's the one that hit the most mainstream of all the releases, I think. And it was one of those early formative experiences where I see it as like, this is brilliant, and it's causing me physical pain. It gave me a splitting headache because you need to plan everything. It is one of those splatters where A has to come before B, which has to come before C. Oh, did you try to put C before B? Oh, no, nothing happens, you idiot.
It's funny because those type of games really usually set me off. But reading the rules and seeing how I was going to play it, you knew this was going to happen. There was no getting around it.
Well, any splatter game, you have to know that that's the way it's going to
be. True. And just the fact that it's so low scoring that even a sort of like a take that for 1 point is very meaningful.
Yes, absolutely. I'm very interested to see if my attitude towards Bus will change. Having, you know, more fully internalized the design idiom of splatter and being more comfortable with that. Or whether it just falls into the same category of the, oh, this is a spatial puzzle that I have no interest in. But we'll absolutely see. Glad you enjoyed Bus. I got to play Battlecrest Metron base game. So, Battlecrest is a card battling game from Buttonshy Games. Buttonshy Games being the publisher that tends to release very minimalistic card games in adorable little wallets that are little card wallet throwbacks from 20 to 30 years ago. The wallets, not the games themselves. And most of their designs are solitaire or solitaire friendly. And Battlecrest is a game with a solo mode. There's an additional deck, small deck of cards, six that you need to do, sometimes additional rules for specific characters. And I've talked about Battlecrest before when it first came out. It continues with the publishing tradition of Buttonshy Games. You can get the print and play for a very, very small quantity of money. And given that it's a small number of cards, it's not a complicated project to do. Or you can actually buy the physical copies, which also tend to be very cheap. And if the game is a success, or if they like it, it will be supported through lots of expansions. Battlecrest has three different base sets and three different waves of expansion content. So there are different stages, and the stages, actually, for what it's worth, for my money, is where the best variety can be found in terms of the overall effect of the match. Different characters. I'll always love different characters in a sort of science fantasy type battle game like this, as well as new AI decks. Now, the two-player game, I think, is wonderful. It's a game of cat and mouse, a very simple but effective card activation system, whereby the available cards, as they get exhausted, that reduces your options, but simultaneously makes you more deadly until such time as you waste half your turn refreshing. And there's always this tension of saying, oh, I can really pull off this awesome combo. Ooh, but it's going to be so vulnerable next round. Do I give up momentum and refresh all my cards, or do I really press the advantage? And I love tempo decisions like that. And this is one of the reasons why I find the solo mode for Battlecrest so utterly disappointing, because the AI character does not operate on that basis at all. The key element that I think fuels a lot of this tension is how defense works in Battlecrest. If you don't have any cards available, your defense is going to be zero, and so someone can wail on you doing a fair amount of damage. On the other hand, if you've got lots of cards available, your defense can be relatively high if you want to devote those resources. And so in addition to the tension, there's a little bit of doublethink about how much someone is willing to devote in terms of fending off your attacks. The AI, on the other hand, seems to generate a relatively random quantity of defense every time you attack them. And so my normal decision-making process, not that I play Battlecrest all the time, I wish I could play it more often, was entirely undone, and my thought was, I just need to hit it as hard as I can to try to overcome some random defense threshold. And that was not nearly as interesting. And on top of that, it had an AI to execute that was probably about as complicated as the base game itself. Now, in the case of Battlecrest, it's a very, very straightforward game. The biggest problem in internalizing the Battlecrest rules is just how the information is presented. By virtue of their publishing model, there necessarily has to be two different little rule booklets of like 8 pages each of tiny, tiny, tiny little pages. But merely by virtue of the fact that it's bifurcated, it ends up feeling more complicated than it actually is, because you're cross-referencing two different documents. But on top of that, there's the standard problem with AI modes: prioritization, what it does in response to attacks, how it triggers attacks, what targets it's going to do, where it's going to move when it moves, etc., 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 etc. I was willing to go through the effort because of my enthusiasm for Battlecrest, and a new wave recently got launched, and I picked up Wave 3 not too long ago. But I do not think I will be going back to Battlecrest solo ever again. This has, however, inspired me to get the actual two-player versus mode back to the table, just so I can play with all the new toys, and indeed experience the tension, the trade-offs, and the tempo considerations that the actual base design gives you. So that is Battlecrest. This specifically was the Metron base game, designed by Dustin Dobson and Milan Zivkovic, published by Buttonshy Games.
Lastly for me, Mark, we got the G.I. Joe deck-building game, Rise of the Flag campaign expansion, back to the table. This is designed by T.C. Petty III, put out by Renegade Games, much like the base game. And it's the fairly bog-standard deck-building game, like Ascension. There's a row of cards in front of you that cycle, and you improve your deck. What the campaign does is puts all these fancy envelopes in the box, and the back of the campaign book has all these logs that you know, turn to log 3 and read that. And you know what's really good about that, Mark? Like, the envelopes have much of the same cards, right? So it goes, you know, get mission cards from envelope 2. And there's mission cards in all of them. So if there's like an errata that, you know, file 5 and it says get these cards from envelope 3, but it really means envelope 2.
Oh no.
Yeah, so that took a while to sort out.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Oh.
So, anyway, that being said, it's still playing out just fine. Interesting stuff going on. Giant aircraft carrier with fancy abilities and sort of...
And Walker's being literal here. There's a physical aircraft carrier that you construct out of cardboard.
And so you strip out all the expansions. So you're sort of back to the base game with all sort of new cards being introduced over and over again. Pets. You get your pets now. Because, you know, it's not G.I. Joe unless, you know, you bring in a parrot.
The only pet I remember is the parrot. Wait, didn't one of the ninjas have a bird, another animal?
And there was Junkyard Dog.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And then if you watch Robot Chicken, there's a fantastic episode about G.I. Joe and the pets.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's G.I. Joe, the deck-building game. Not much I can say about it. It's great. It's got the Cobra. And they do their, like, crazy, you know, over-the-top, trying to take over Earth with their missions, and the way each mission is different. Really interesting.
Did you know that there's going to be a side-scrolling beat-em-up that's going to be released this year that is G.I. Joe-themed?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, because we're in a kind of a golden age of rejuvenation of the genre, and I've seen some early footage. It looks impressive.
Nice. And that's G.I. Joe, the deck-building game, Rise of the Flag campaign expansion.
Finally for me, you got to play Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs. This is a review copy sent to us by Cephalofair Games, and I gotta say, honestly, I'll talk about the game later, but the mere fact of this game, of Buttons and Bugs, makes me very happy about the hobby. Because I think it's worth a little bit of a history lesson. Back in 2018, when Gloomhaven was first published, it was this weird little Kickstarter campaign that lost its fool mind. It's important to remember that before Gloomhaven was Gloomhaven, it was just this thing that raised a few $100,000 in Kickstarter. Now, granted, that's a lot of money. And even at the time, that was relatively large amount of money for board games, but that was not, you know, there had already been 7-figure Kickstarters at the time, and then Gloomhaven was released, and suddenly was like everyone was like, wait, what? And then the reprint got the 7-figure Kickstarter that it had in the first place, and then there was a fan-made version by Joe Klipfel that reduced Gloomhaven to a single-handed experience called, and I love this title, Gloomholden. A solo version that captured some of the mechanical intricacies of Gloomhaven, but nonetheless in a shrunk solitaire form, purely card-driven that you could do in one hand. And like Ouroboros eating its own tail, Cephalofair Games reached out to Glowclipful, and that fan project inspired by Gloomhaven has now become an official Cephalofair Games project, Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs. The theme is that your adventure has been shrunk down to a teeny little size. And now you play a solo game that is kind of, sort of, but almost completely unlike Gloomhaven. And the scenario maps are just cards. The scenario deck consists of a whole bunch, you know, there's flavor text, there are items on the cards, and there's setups and the scenario instructions. But you just flip it over, that's the map. It's the back of a card, Walker.
Do you know what else is fantastic, Mark? It's the box.
Because
the ratio dimensions are exactly like Gloomhaven.
It looks just like Gloomhaven.
So if you
just
get it out of scale, you have no idea
shrunk
how
down
nice
to
and
a
small
teeny,
this box
I know,
is.
I know. I was hopeful. This is a very, very minor gripe. And it comes with these, like, 1 centimeter tall miniatures representing your character. And I was hopeful that this was going to be a one-to-one scale miniatures game. There have been a number of them in the past, usually on a tabletop scale. But no, sadly, it's actually smaller than the actual scale, as I realized this when playing Scenario 3, where you, mild spoilers, are supposed to start fighting mice. And the mice are just these tiny cubes. They're not actually the size. Okay, fine. So I guess it is actually still too small. I think that was a tiny bit of a missed opportunity, but anyway. So, it is very much like Gloomhaven in the sense that it is card-driven. You have these ability cards. You do the top half of one card, the bottom half another card, and the classes are all different. You even have some notion of a modifier deck and a modifier deck that gets that elaborates itself as you level up. Now, you don't have any control about how it elaborates itself, but that's fine. And combat is now dice-driven. There's always a good result, a bad result, and a neutral result, and you cycle through them on a relatively... The cycling is deterministic, but the result every time is random. That part, I think, is honestly brilliant. That's when it really shines and captures a lot of what made Gloomhaven interesting in the smaller package with lower rules overhead. The card cycling, though, I'm a little less optimistic about, because one of the cool things about Gloomhaven was there was really a solid sense of tempo. You know, there was the early abilities, and you had to be careful about when to use the lose abilities. There are some abilities that you use it and the card goes away, which is a problem because card cycling is a representation of both your health and of your abilities. Gloomholden elaborated on that, and now Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs further heightens that. You have 4 cards. No matter how many times you level up, you're always going to have 4 cards. Some of them get upgraded, and you're still just playing 2 cards per, and sometimes they come back flipped. That gives you a little bit more legs, but ultimately, you end up in a very, very, very tight race against time. Gloomhaven itself was a race against time, but Buttons and Bugs really narrows that to a fine point. And consequently, I feel like some of the nuance and some of the tempo has gone away, but those are the kind of prices you expect to pay.
Now, are the items adorable like they should be? Like they're like acorn helmets and...
Oh, yeah, they're exactly that, yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, they're not represented graphically. They're just text.
Oh.
But that is... Yeah, sorry. But that is exactly
no little illustrations.
No, unfortunately not. I'm actually glad. I was afraid that the entire thing, especially based on the title, was going to be overly cutesy. I'm not a big fan of cutesy. They've decided to keep the same tone of the original Gloomhaven of money grubbing, desperate hired killers, okay. Which I've kind of appreciated, and that's still very much the case. And I really like the fact that we're talking about a very low footprint. 20-minute scenario game. That's one of the reasons why I've played 3 sessions already going through my sort of quote-unquote campaign of Buttons and Bugs. And some scenarios are character class specific. The character differentiation is not to the same extent as of Gloomhaven, obviously, but nonetheless very impressive. And I'm just really pleased with Buttons and Bugs as a project, as an evolution, as tracing back its history and its lineage. It makes me very pleased to be a member of this glorious hobby, as well as the excellent representation in the cast and just the publication history. Does it capture everything that I love about Gloomhaven? Absolutely not. It really doesn't. But it has enough of the hints of the genius of the design of Gloomhaven that I'm very much appreciative of what Buttons and Bugs manages to execute. And so I'm very interested in continuing. I'm probably going to be playing at least a few more sessions of Buttons and Bugs. We'll see how long the campaign manages to keep my interest, because the writing in Gloomhaven, although I very much appreciated the tone, it somewhat hit or miss in terms of the overall narrative, per se. We'll see how far it develops and see what Buttons and Bugs offers in the future. But for now, I'm very, very impressed with how much they've been able to distill and very pleased to be able to spend, 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. Just clear off a side of your desk. That's all the space you're going to need. Open up the teeny little box and play a tiny little tactical adventure thing. Very impressive. This is a review copy sent to us by Cephalofair Games. Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs was co-designed by Joe Klipfel, who designed Gloomholden, and Nikki Valens, whose work I'm always eager to see. They're a fascinating designer. And this is published this year pursuant to successful crowdfunding. That is Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs. And those are the games we played this week. Let's take a brief break to pay some bills.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And now on to the news and why it doesn't matter.
So CGE, we like quite a few of their games. They've decided to go into the actual manufacturing of board games. I believe most of their games were manufactured by Orin Carton, which translates to East Cardboard. And so they've become a co-owner of this facility. They do puzzles and all sorts of other things. So now they own their own board game manufacturing factory.
Vertical integration.
That's right. Although it seems to not have worked for HABA, but they're working their way out of it, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, Games Workshop has been doing this for a long time. And Asmodee has done a little bit of that, not in the manufacturing sense, but in the distribution sense. I mean, it's the natural endpoint of a lot of business planning to engage in vertical integration of some degree or another. We'll see how it works for them. Seismic Walker, I'm always disappointed when a crowdfunding project that is clearly the product of a lot of passion and has some design and thematic elements that show promise fails to reach fruition. I'm still very chagrined at the failure of Burned to fund. I hope that a relaunch happens successfully at some point. And Seismic was, again, crowdfunded. There was a first attempt at Kickstarter that failed to reach the results that the designer wanted. Seismic is going to be returning on GameFound sometime this summer, and I, for one, am looking forward to it.
I saw this. I, too, am very excited. Mark, what's better than eating your board game? This is it. It's great. This is called Gummy Quest, Delicious Fantasy Gummies. You get 150 of these gummies, and they're all shaped in all different sizes. Like, you know, you got your heroes and your dice and your potions and your monsters. So all sorts of different variety of these gummies, and it is a Kickstarter that is out there. And who knows?
But gummies don't hold their shape.
Who knows if there's a game involved? But you say, oh, I killed that goblin. So you grab the goblin, you eat it, and then, you know, the guy beside you says, that was my warrior that you just ate. And you're done. But anyway, I thought it was hilarious. Yep. Gummy Quest.
Legacy games have you tear up cards, but that is for chumps. That exactly. Is for people who cannot commit. If you really want to destroy board game components, you eat them.
Just so.
Macross news, Walker.
There was.
Macross news.
It's true.
Macross is going to be streaming on Disney Plus. Macross has been in a nightmare of rights distribution issues, and now almost all, a shocking amount, but not all, will be available streaming on Disney Plus soon. And soon everyone will be able to be exposed to the franchise that has captured my imagination for decades and say, what? What?
I can't wait for the new stuff that they're going to put out, Mark.
What? Is this... Anyway, now people might be wondering, I thought that this was a board game podcast. This is the board game jurisdictional hook. Are you ready? The original Battletech mechs were ripped off of Macross mechs, which is a reflection of the rights and intellectual property nightmares that led to the failure of distributing Macross all around the world that have now been resolved. That is your board game jurisdictional
there
hook.
You go.
Nailed it. Macrossed.
So there's a new thing on game. I don't know if it's new, but it just is weird. Now you can just pre-order. Simon has a game found up called The Dead Keep. And it's you know, maybe campaign games have not hit for you, but this is the one. This is the campaign game that you need to pre-order on GameFound.
Wow. Well, that seems like a good note on which to end it.
It does.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're sorry for this abbreviated episode. Don't worry, we will be more wrong in the future. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find all our contact information at sowronggames.com. We read everything you send us, and we'll get back to you if we can, if we survive the week, which is, as we say, doubtful. 6-5 and pick 'em, as they say in Vegas. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope to see you again soon. Please do take care.
Peace!
And remember, thank your rules explainer.
You've been listening to So Very Wrong About Games, produced by Michael Walker and edited by Mark Biggin. Special thanks goes to What Does It Eat for generously allowing us to use their most excellent song, FOS, as our theme. You can find them at whatdoesiteat.com. You can reach us by email at soverywrongaboutgames@gmail.com or on Twitter at sowronggames. Thanks very much, see you next time, and always, try to be right, but remember you are so very wrong.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.